Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Oh, yes. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We meet here every Tuesday at noon, and you can catch us again Tuesday at 7 o'clock in the evening. Same show. And we talk about food and farming and recipes. We have advice. We have opinions, of course. And we encourage people to eat healthy. We encourage people to eat good food and enjoy life. And we're going to be talking about doing that very thing. We've got lots of interesting things to talk about today. And with us, we're going to be talking to the people that created agricultured fermentation foods. A wonderful thing.
Yum, 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 yum.
A wonderful thing. First, a word from somebody that supports this radio station.
Support for Donalana Kitchen comes from Wheatsfield Co-op, your full-service natural foods grocery in Ames. Community-owned, community-focused since 1974. Open daily 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. Located downtown in Ames at 413 Northwestern, just off Main Street. Everyone can shop Wheatsfield Co-op.
Yes, this is the Donalana Kitchen. So every 4 years, things get quite a bit more interesting here in Iowa. I hear there's a presidential election coming up this fall, and this last weekend, my goodness, did we have a to-do. It's time for all of us to take stock of things around our kitchen table and discuss the issues.
Listen
to those candidates. Find out what's going on. It's important. That's a good use for a kitchen table. Talk things up here. Bernie Sanders was here. Bernie Sanders, he's running for president. Would you believe it?
And he got quite a turnout in Ames.
That was Saturday.
Yeah, and did you know, actually yesterday there was an article in the New York Times about the turnouts for Bernie Sanders in Iowa were so big that it is now time to take his candidacy seriously.
Well,
can you imagine that?
We're serious. I heard there were like 500 people that showed up here.
That's good. That's just Ames. He had three or four other performances.
And there was a place called Kensett, Iowa. I don't even know where Kensett, Iowa is. I think it's over by Davenport someplace. Is it out in the east? Okay. And it had more people show up than that were in the town. The town has 200 plus sort of people, and 300 people showed up there. In Minneapolis on Sunday, he had 1,000 people show up. So Not just one candidate is running. There's lots of candidates. And that's just on the sort of Democratic sort of side there.
Yeah, and KHOI was there for the Bernie Sanders shindig in Ames, and it is going to be broadcast on Heart of Iowa this week. June 10th,
next week. Next Wednesday.
Wednesday, June 10th on the noon show of Heart of Iowa. If you want to hear what Senator Sanders had to say for Iowa, it was pretty interesting.
Yeah. And the Republican straw poll will be coming to Central Iowa later this summer. So we've got lots of things to discuss, lots of things to consider. It's time to take our citizenship seriously. Remember this four-letter word, vote. Ah, do that. Oh, and also this last weekend, there was something in Ames called the Ames Progressive Potluck. And the word potluck and progressive seemed to turn into a really nice event. That was the first event ever of that.
Well, you know, Lana and I always like a good potluck. So this one, I don't know how they got the weather so perfect. It was Sunday afternoon in the park. Which park was it?
Brookside.
And there was actually quite a good turnout. And the potluck was enormous. Lots and lots of good food.
Well, there was a comment from a man standing next to me, and he said, well, progressives sure are progressive about their food. He never saw so many quinoa salads in his whole life. So
yes, there was a rumor that progressives have better potlucks than conservatives. Just a rumor.
Well, that's a challenge I can put out there. No matter what your political leanings are, as we're moving into this season of thinking about the upcoming elections, let's gather with some food and have some good discussions.
That's
over
right.
That.
Gather around the table.
I mentioned we're going to be talking about eating well. I've got two little news items here from the Donalana Kitchen news desk. Tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick-tick. That's a ticker tape here. Tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick. Okay. First one is the invention of the potato chip. And it's true. Nobody can eat just one.
I thought we already invented it.
No. It's a historical.
Okay.
The potato chip was invented, supposedly, in 1853 in Saratoga Springs, New York, and it was called the Saratoga chip. So if you want to mark that on your calendar, I think they were celebrating that this week.
So, oh, my, the birthday of the potato chip.
And heaven knows where the potato chip has taken our waistlines, because we do love those things. And here is another little news item about a food item.
Iconic food item.
This is from an article. I've referred to this person before. A writer named Jill Richardson. She has a blog called La Vita Locavore. And she writes about food systems. Okay, she's got the article here called Kraft's Mac and Cheese, Less Toxic, Still Bad. Kraft made news the other day with this announcement. Beginning next year, its macaroni and cheese will no longer contain artificial preservatives or colors. That's nice. One of our main favorite foods of American kids will most closely resemble something that actually comes from the earth instead of what some scientists concocted in a lab. Maybe it's because they were responding to people's concern. And it turns out the famous nuclear orange color of Kraft macaroni and cheese can be obtained from natural ingredients anyway, like turmeric, annatto, and paprika, instead of artificial food dye. So they're going in the other direction here. But there's still a bit of a problem, because with or without preservatives, Kraft's macaroni and cheese is just refined carbs coated in a dairy-based sauce, which may or may not qualify as cheese. First, as far as macaroni is concerned, Kraft takes most of the nutrients out of the wheat and tries to put it back together. And the cheese is not quite cheese, because they take that apart too. So put it back together.
They process it.
Right. Okay. Well, so Kraft macaroni for cheese makes for Kraft macaroni and cheese makes for a cheap product that's high in protein, 9 grams per serving, low in fat, 3 grams per serving, and less healthy than actual cheese and a wheat-based pasta. So even if the neon orange shines a little less bright, it's still not really good for you. So,
if your kids are addicted to this, there are organic versions made by Annie's that you can get at a number of stores around town. It's quite popular. You can get a whole grain macaroni, which improves things a lot, and the cheeses are organic and perhaps less processed. And certainly they have not put those unnatural colors in them forever. It's good that Kraft is catching on here.
Right. We hope to catch on to a lot more good things to eat. We have some special guests in our studio today.
We sure do. We have Eric and Sarah Underberg, and they have a wonderful business called Agricultured. They were at the Ames Farmers Market last year, and we're really missing them this year, but they make fermented foods. In there, they have a little a business, probably not so little, in Waukee, and they're here to talk with us today about fermentation.
Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen.
Thanks for having us.
Good morning.
And they brought things for us to eat.
We did.
So what do you got, Eric?
Well, I brought a few of our products. I brought some of our sauerkraut that we make. Our goal is to try to make functional foods function for people in the modern, era. So we took your grandma's sauerkraut, and then we took modern flavor combinations and tried to fuse them together so that people can experience fermentation on a level that they can appreciate. A lot of fermented foods are a little different for people than what they're normally used to. We're so used to vinegar-based sour foods. And the fermented foods they make lactic acid, so they have a little less tang to them.
Right. For example, your pickles. I love your pickles. They're not so acid, but they're really dilly and lots of garlicky, and they're just delicious.
So we just try to make stuff that people can, start to eat and appreciate right away, and then it will help build wellness in their body and help them get back on the traditional pathways of eating that I know you ladies promote on your show.
Well, and the, you know, the idea is that, of course, anything that's fermented is like, it's good for your intestines, you know, yes. Whether it's yogurt or kombucha or pickles or sauerkraut. And you don't eat, you know, like most of the sauerkraut that one buys in the store has been fermented, and then they cook it to kill the natural probiotics.
Yeah, they probiotics. Pasteurize it. They pasteurize it, and that kills all of the live beneficial bacteria that would be in it.
Yeah, so talk more about this fermentation thing. We want to encourage good food, along with tasty food, good food that's good for our bodies. Why fermentation?
Well, fermented foods are actually what we consider to be the missing link in our food chain. It's a whole food that has amazing probiotic benefits. I mean, a lot of people understand what probiotic means now, thanks to Activia, but
probiotic is
yes.
for life.
Right. The when we started, this was all Eric's really idea. I really did want to jump on this bandwagon, and he decided that if we could make these functional whole foods taste really good, then the transition from eating our processed foods to eating a whole food would be so easy that you wouldn't even notice that you were doing it.
So if you just put sauerkraut in your Kraft's macaroni and cheese, you're halfway there, right?
Well, no, if you put non-pasteurized, non-cooked, you have to put live bacteria.
Right.
Yeah, that's good.
Right.
And, of course, historically, we ate a lot of these products because fermentation
we did.
Is actually a preservation
product. It is. It is.
And pre-refrigeration.
It is. Even on meat, they would put the lactic acid on it too, mm-hmm. to kill it so that, you know, they could preserve it that way. I mean, we've been eating these foods for hundreds of years, and it's only in the last three or so generations that we've stopped eating and making these kinds of foods. Number one, because we have refrigeration. Number two, because now we have, you know, our quote-unquote fast foods now. We have our Kraft macaroni and cheeses, and we have all of these easy, commercialized, highly processed foods that we were, you know, that we were introduced as, oh, save time, you know, be a good mom and save time and spend more time doing this or doing this, when actually we were just slowly killing, you know, ourselves and our loved ones and our children. So,
yes, we've learned that our bodies are home to many, many beneficial bacteria. We're not just one big lump of human being. We are a colony of lots of things, and they all need to be healthy. It helps us keep all alive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Our guts, which is what we're trying to populate with all this beneficial bacteria, is actually considered to be our second brain. So it'll send a signal up to your brain and say, hey, you know, for people who have the sweet tooth problem, hey, I need some sweet stuff down here. And so our brain sends a signal, okay, we're going to eat some sweet stuff. So we eat the sweet stuff. And what that actually does is that sweet stuff goes down into our guts, and it populates the bad bacteria because that's what it feeds on. And when we stop eating foods high in beneficial bacteria, we stop creating that healthy gut bacteria that we really, really have to have. I mean, if you just think of your guts as a very long, winding road, and the food that you eat is kind of the vessel in which it travels to, you know, every corner in our guts is called a niche, and in that niche there is a specific strain of beneficial bacteria that needs to live there. And when they get to it, they kind of, you know, pull the stop on the bus and they jump off, and they, you know, help to keep your body populated with what you need in order to, you know, be healthy, number one. Number two, fight off, you know, colds and flus and diseases. And so, I mean, it's amazing what can happen to you and for you when you just start putting this into your diet, even just one time a day, because that's how I started. I started with just one time a day, and he actually kind of snuck it into my food.
He tricked you, didn't he?
He tricked me,
yes,
like I was
yes.
three.
Yeah. And you can trick your children into this, too, because this stuff actually tastes good. What am I opening here, Eric? This is a...
That's a kombucha tea that we make. Kombucha tea is a...
Oh, right. They make a lot of kombucha, which they you guys sell it at the Des Moines Farmers Market.
We sell it at the Des Moines Farmers Market. We sell it at the downtown Cedar Rapids Farmers Market, as well as at the Freight House Farmers Market in Davenport.
Well, somehow yours tastes better than mine. What are you, and you have flavored too, Eric.
Yeah,
you
this
do
is
the
ginger.
This is ginger.
Well, kombucha tea is a really interesting product. It's been around for over 1,000 years. There was a doctor, and his name was Dr. Kombu. He was a Korean physician, and the Chinese emperor was having stomach ailments that he couldn't cure. So they called for Dr. Kombu. Dr. Kombu came and brought his cha, which is the word for tea in China. Mm-hmm. So that's how the name kombucha started. And evidently it worked because he lived to get his name put on the drink. But it's amazing when you ferment tea and sugar with a special culture that people like to call the SCOBY or the mother, it instead of creating alcohol like wine or beer, it creates organic acids, about 11 organic acids. Also, they did a study last year, and they found out there's about 30 beneficial microbes that actually inhabit kombucha. And not only are the microbes there and present, and they're probiotic microbes that help our gut health, but also there's live enzymes, because bacteria or microbes don't have teeth. So microbes secrete enzymes to do all their work. So these enzymes help us digest our food, but also the beneficial acids in our body, they have some great effects. They found out in some studies that one of the acids is called glucuronic acid, and that actually helps our body to detoxify. It's the same acid our liver makes and uses and to get heavy molecules and like the pesticides and heavy toxins out of our bodies. And also there's a hyaluronic acid, which is one that helps lubricate your joints. So kombucha is a wonderful, fermented probiotic thing that helps some people's stomachs also, but it also has a few different microbes and different functions than the traditionally lacto-fermented vegetables that we also sell.
How do you make yours so good? How many days do you leave the SCOBY? In like Scooby-Doo, right? Okay. How many days do you leave it in the tea sugar solution?
Well, a lot of it depends on temperature, since microbes are... Well, I don't know, cold-blooded. I don't think they have any blood, but they are
temperature responsive.
Determinate, right. Their metabolism is determined by the temperature. So depending on the temperature, it takes around 7 to 11 days. We measure pH as an accurate indicator.
Oh, what a good idea, because I think I'm getting mine too acid.
Yeah, that can happen. I mean, kombucha is a lot like farming or growing houseplants. It's just that consistent, repetition where you start to get consistent and you keep it going, especially with kombucha. Since there's yeast and bacteria involved in kombucha, it's a balance.
So you're just using those pH strips that you buy at the drugstore?
Yeah, well, I have a pH meter that I use. But, yeah, you can use the ones at the drugstore. I mean, eventually, your palate becomes, gets an acumen, for the pH mm-hmm. level, and you can taste. I mean, the basic best way to do it's by your taste. But the thing is, your culture can get out of balance. You can swing from the yeast side to the bacteria side.
Oh, that's right in the SCOBY.
Yes, and it's also how you feed it, when you feed it, and the temperature you keep it at, and how long. Mm-hmm. What microbes will keep doing what they do until the temperature slows them down, or until they eat themselves out of house and home. Or until their pH gets so low that they can't keep going.
So what's the ideal pH? I'm going to start measuring.
Well, with kombucha, it needs to start out below 4.6, and that's why when you make kombucha, you put old kombucha back in, and that acidifies it so the tea won't mold. Mm-hmm. I know mold is a big concern with people who make kombucha. People mm-hmm. are really worried about it, but if you start out right, mold's really not an issue with kombucha. So as the bacteria and yeasts start to work, the yeast break the sugar down into alcohol, then the bacteria in it, our special bacteria called Acetobacter, and they convert the alcohol into organic acids, and they also grow the SCOBY or the Zooalgae, whatever you want to call it. It's it's pure cellulose.
Zooalgae?
Yeah, Zooalgae. It's the mushroom, they call it, or the mother that's the white mass.
Oh, I never heard that word. Okay.
And that's actually just pure cellulose. And it's interesting because in science, they're starting to study this because it's the fastest way you can make cellulose. So you can make paper out of, kombucha SCOBYs if you dry them. And actually, you can make cellulose faster that way than you can if you grow plants, you know, in a field or trees.
Because it's right.
Oh,
it's
my, what a wonderful thing! All of these.
Oh,
all
a new
these,
biofuel.
Really.
All of these bacteria. Like Donna, I've been making kombucha home, but it's sure nice to taste some by somebody who knows what they're doing.
And what's the final pH? When do you know when you stop it?
Well, okay, so when you pull kombucha out, if you want to second ferment it, which a lot of people do, and the reason you second ferment is because initially you don't want to put in things with oils that can damage the SCOBY. They'll slow the bacteria down. So several essential oils that are in different foods can be antibacterial in nature. So you ferment it, and then you pull it out, and then you add your flavorings. Like, say you want to add ginger, you want to add, you know, fresh fruit, strawberry, whatever, seasonal and good, and because all these things have wonderful health benefits. You put them in with the kombucha. Now, you want to take it out when it still tastes a little bit sweet, so there's enough residual sugar that the fermentation will continue.
Oh, okay.
Fermenting is like driving a boat. Now, the reason I say that is because...
Did you know that, Lana?
If you want to turn, you want to make sure you're starting to turn way before you need to turn. If you want to stop in a boat, you have to start slowing down way before you need to stop. Because if you don't, you're in trouble. And the same with fermentation. So when you have that oh crap moment, you know, it's my kombucha's too sour, it's really too late. So you want to like pull it out a little bit sweet and then let it coast in, you know, where you want it to be at the end.
Okay, so
what a great analogy.
I think I could relate to that. I'm going to try some new things.
I want to remind people you're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is KHOI 89.1. Music and music and thought and good food for the heart of Iowa. Let's hear a little music here. We're back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. That was a dandy little reel called Evil Diane. But we're talking about nothing evil here. We're talking about the beneficial bacteria that live all around us and in us, too. We're talking to Eric and Sarah Underberg from Agriculture. We've been talking about kombucha, but there's some other things that they are very good at making, and they're tasty, too.
Right. Eric is about to feed us some cultured mushrooms. I have to say on their logo, Agricultured, it says, wake up your insides. They were at the farmer's market last year. They are at the Des Moines Farmer's Market, and they also sell at Wheatsfield. And they also do encourage you to make your own. But if you don't get that together, it's great to go out and buy their products. I have to rave about the pickles because they're not so sour like, you know, the regular canned things. And now I'm going to eat some of this sauerkraut here. Yum. Chomp, chomp, chomp. It's good. Oh, it's so good.
I really love their sauerkraut, all kinds, and they've got all kinds.
Look
of
at
different.
These mushrooms.
And I just chomped into, tell me about the pickle I just chomped into. It was very lovely.
Well, thank you. It's a naturally fermented pickle. We call them the real dill. And it's kind of a play on words because our pickles are real pickles. This is the way they were made for thousands of years by people who harvested food and, like you both said earlier, didn't have refrigeration. And so what do you do? Well, if you know, if you're in Europe, you know, in a temperate climate and you have winter coming and you're harvesting these vegetables, you have two choices: let them freeze, let them rot. And so people amazingly figured out to put salt on these vegetables, and the salt drew the juice out of the vegetables, and then they would weight them down and keep the vegetables under their own natural juices that came out from the salt. And lo and behold, just the right microbes were actually living on these vegetables when they were alive and doing wonderful things to protect the wild yeast and bacteria were protecting the health of these plants. And then after they died, they would preserve them and actually increase the health, benefits of these plants in our bodies. Like, for example, sauerkraut is very high in vitamin C. Cabbage naturally doesn't have much vitamin C. It's bound up in the cabbage. But when you ferment it into sauerkraut, it becomes, marvelously healthy food that actually is better for you than straight cabbage. In fact, Captain Cook and the old sailors in Europe used to take sauerkraut on their voyages, across the ocean to prevent scurvy. So there's a lot of benefits from these foods to eat them. 85% of our immune system is in our guts, scientists say. And when we eat these foods, they help to build the microbe population that's inside our guts. A study in 2014, they realized that there's 14,000 different microbes in our intestines, and they all play crucial roles. And scientists said the bad thing is when we have to take antibiotics, what happens to us is it's like we carpet bomb our intestines and we wipe out some species, they never come back. So when you see moms that are like, I care about my children, their health, so I feed them some yogurt. Well, yogurt's great, but yogurt has three bacteria, that's it, that make almost all yogurts. So that's why it's really important to eat live fermented foods and eat them more.
In addition to yogurt.
Yeah, and the greater variety you eat, the better it is, because we have 14,000 different microbes we need to support.
Now, I like to put and or your pickles or your sauerkraut on sandwiches and things. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to eat them. It's a great picnic food since we're in picnic season. What I think is in addition to the quality of products you make, I think Eric has a really good palate and makes great recipes. They really, really taste good.
Yes, you talked about how these pickles would have been made in hundreds and hundreds of years ago. Is the process very similar to the kind of thing you're doing?
Yeah, I make traditionally fermented foods. The interesting thing about fermented foods in the stores, I break it into two categories. There's some foods that are traditionally fermented. Now, modern food science and food science regulation does really not appreciate wild fermentation because, for example, big corporations, like, for example, ones that make like crapperoni and cheese, as I like to call it, they need everything to be extremely predictable. Earlier, you were talking about the macaroni and cheese and how they take the wheat when they mill it. And they break it down into about 60 constituent parts. So they take a kernel of wheat, which is a wonderful natural food we've eaten for, thousands of years. They actually split it into 60 different streams, and then they recombine it according to what they need. I listened to an expert on that. He was talking about cookies, and he said these large cookie manufacturers, they have cellophane packages. He said their cookies need to all be the exact same size every time. So when those things come down the assembly line and are done baking, they will always fit in the package. Mm-hmm. So they actually have to take wheat and move things in and out of that wheat to get the same bake every time. And so, with wild fermentation, it kind of takes its own time.
It's wild.
And it's more of an art than it is a science, so to speak. Now, you can look at the end result, like the pH. It gets sour, but it doesn't always do it predictably. So when people used to make pickles, and the way I make them traditionally is, part of it is, doing the same process. Part of it is understanding what's going on. Like a good baker knows how to look at their flour and adjust the water and, different ingredients to get the same flavor. Well, when you ferment, it's the same kind of thing. If there's, more or less sugar in the vegetables, you have to taste them. As you ferment, the flavor comes on. And then the last part of it is just pure luck, just like farming, I guess.
Well, in your real deal pickles, so you're cutting up your cucumbers, and you put the dill in the fermentation process? And I suppose garlic.
Yes, ma'am. It's very simple. It's cucumbers, water, salt. So you have to make a brine. You cut the cucumbers, put them in. I add garlic, dill, and dill weed, dill seed, and that's really pretty much it. And then let nature do its thing.
So how long do those sit in the brine to come out the way you sell them?
There's a few tricks to ferment. I mean, anybody can ferment, but there's probably very few that can ferment very well, and a lot of it depends on certain things like the temperature you ferment at, like we were talking about the microbes, they go faster, slower. If you take pickles and let them ferment at a temperature above about 70, they can start to get soft. Another key when you make pickles, a lot of people that want to ferment their own, here's a little tip for you at home. You need to cut the blossom end of the pickle off. If you don't, there's enzymes that, from the flower that stay there, and they'll start to soften the pickle. They'll get in the juice, and they'll start to break them down, you know, during the brining process.
So thank you for that information,
that's
sir.
That's important. Well, we'll have to mention that again when cucumber season comes. So you're pickling in a temperature-controlled environment then?
I control my temperature to the extent that I can control it right now for a small operation. So, I make sure my pickles don't get above 70. But I'm not at the point where I can hold them at one temperature. I mean, so, yeah.
So you just turn the air conditioner on in the summertime.
You gave up my cigarette.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I just don't let it get too hot.
I don't do very well above 70 myself, so.
I'm building a cooler right now. I mean, we're a small operation. I mean, our agricultured foods is right here right now because it's me. I mean, me and a knife. That's about it. So right now we have a cooler that's our produce cooler, and then I put ferments when they're done. I'll park them in the cooler because it slows the bacteria mm-hmm. down and puts them in a state of stasis, so then everything kind of stays where it's at until we, you know, bring them to market. But, you know, I have another cooler I just got done setting up, and that'll be my fermentation cooler. And I'll just hold that at a temperature of probably 65 or, you know, depending. I haven't figured it out yet. But
just
then
barely.
Stuff
cooled.
Can age.
Yep.
And as you know, I'm sure, Donna, that as food ferments, whether it's cheese, whether it's salami, pepperoni, prosciutto, whatever, that it's that controlled fermentation at a low temperature, which most of these fermentations were all done in temperate climates in the winter, or, you know, at the fall, winter months.
Yeah.
Even
yeah.
hams, that slow fermentation process builds those flavors that are so complex and what we all really actually crave.
Have you ever been to visit Herb Ackhouse's ham fermenting? You should go.
Yeah,
Have you been there?
No.
Oh, they're in
yeah.
Norwalk, but you would really get a kick out of seeing. I mean, he has a really sophisticated operation because he's dealing with meat, which is really, really intense. But his prosciutto room is unbelievable.
Yeah, I saw some videos on YouTube about it, mm-hmm. and they're a great example of a traditional, you know, product that's made using modern technology. And it's really interesting. If a person goes on YouTube and looks up prosciutto making, you can find some videos where some old Italian guys show you how they do it, like in their house, which is so neat because when you ferment these foods, they really preserve and protect themselves. And now with meat, you have to take a few more precautions, but. For example, when I do sauerkraut or pickles, it's amazing the bacteria that live right on those vegetables. As soon as you wake them up and you give them a place to work, which is in the brine, they actually secrete antibiotics that they make on their own that kill all food pathogen microbes. I mean, it's just phenomenal. I had to do a lot of research to get my license, and I was so
bet you did.
The inspector said, well, how do you know that your sauerkraut's not going to poison, you know, all of Iowa or not going to be falling over from botulism? So I had to start studying, and actually I had to almost write a white paper on it. And it was amazing that I found out that these fermented foods, the lactic acid, actually kills most of the microbes, and then the other ones are killed, for example, like salmonella, you know, botulism, all these things, by the actual probiotic – you know, lactic acid microbes, they actually secrete their own antibiotics.
So this may be why the human race has survived for as long as it has.
Certainly, yeah. I mean, you know, when you eat those probiotic foods traditionally, you know, and it was just like you were saying earlier, because we had to do it for preservation purposes, that they actually built our health and preserved our health. I mean, it's just phenomenal how that whole system was created and worked. I mean, everything from the whole food type diet, you know, to the fermented foods. About a third of our foods traditionally are fermented. And when we ate those things, people didn't have, you know, problems like we're having now with the chronic health diseases. And so that's why we're trying to do is spread this message of, hey, we need to turn back to the past. And I think we just fit in with all the other people that are going whole food, they're going organic, because at one time there was no organic food. People would look at you like, okay, we have food. You want some wheat? You know, do you
Everything
want some flour?
Everything was
you know?
Organic.
Exactly, yeah. Right. And that, you know, that preserve people's health. And now it's nice that scientific studies are proving that up, you know, and so people are realizing it through the internet and things, and we're revolting against these giant, you know, food corps that are trying to feed us, you know, frankenfoods or crapperoni and cheese or whatever you want to call
it. Well, I'm always saying that, you know, humans know how to send a man to the moon, but we don't really actually know a lot there's plenty going on inside our own digestive tract that we have no idea what it is. We just, science is not yet sophisticated enough to understand all of these things.
Well, you know, in the early 1900s, it's when we really got away from fermented foods because refrigeration came on board with the, you know, that widespread electrical, you know, distribution. So we went from ice boxes, you know, which were, you know, not very big and hard, expensive to maintain, to electric refrigerators. We went, penicillin came out not long after that. You know, and sulfa drugs.
Crisco and white bread.
Well, this is what I'm getting at. Actually, in the early 1900s, scientists all thought this was the modern age. In fact, at one point, there was one scientist that thought there wasn't much else to learn, that we'd pretty much learned everything there was. And in that same vein, scientists said, we know how to make butter. So they said they could make a real, an artificial butter that would beat real butter, and that's where the wonderful thing of trans fats started. And so, you know, in the early 1900s, we said, oh, we have trans fats. This is great. Butter replacement. It's the modern age. We don't need cows. We don't need grazing. You know, we're going to progress into science. And now we found out that, you know, that probably has been responsible for a huge majority of heart attacks that have occurred in the U.S.
Right. Just because we can does not necessarily mean we should sometimes. We're listening to KHOI 89.1. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. That little tune was called Bird in a Tree. And I picked that tune because I've been thinking much about birds. Birds are migrating through. Last week, I spent a lot of time out in my garden. I was planting peppers. I was planting all sorts of things. So I was out there pretty much every day. And the whole week, I was listening to one bird, or not one bird, but one call. It was driving me nuts. I have yet to figure out what it is because it's not there anymore. It must have been passing through. And for a whole week, I listened to this thing go, ticky-tick, ticky-tick, hee-haw, ticky-tick, ticky-tick, hee-haw. Really, truly, on and on. And every now and then, it'd throw you a quick one by saying, ticky-tick, ticky-tick, hee-haw. It drive me nuts. And I looked and looked. My garden is prairie and farm fields on three sides, woods on one side, and there's lots of bird activity now. So if anyone knows what ticky-tick, ticky-tick, hee-haw is, please contact us here at the radio station. You can email khoiradio@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
It will preserve Lana's sanity. Yeah, she can put a name on this bird.
Yeah, I looked and I didn't see a thing, but that little tune is going on in my head. Well, we're back here at the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking about cultured food for the agriculture
this
people.
This is high culture.
This is high culture.
We are drinking an incredible strawberry soda, Eric. How did you get it to taste so strawberry?
Well, believe it or not, I used real strawberries.
I would say this is a kid-friendly probiotic here, if ever I tasted one. So, is this a kombucha base? What did you do?
Well, that actually is a ginger bug. What people
ginger bug?
Don't understand, I think, is that there used to be a lot of wisdom behind grandma's old remedies. I don't know if any people out in the audience or if any of you ever got ginger ale served to you when you had a bad stomach. Well, unfortunately, a company like Canada Dry, they came out and they took a wonderful fermented probiotic beverage like ginger ale, which traditionally was made from fermented, you know, ginger root and, you know, water and some sugar. They actually took corn syrup and added some ginger flavor, and gave you something that really doesn't help your stomach when you're feeling sick. For example, root beer used to be made from about 20 to 30 different types of roots that all had herbal, you know, properties. So when people drank it, they were almost medicinal beverages. So what I made here is a natural fermented soda. So it builds its own carbon dioxide by fermentation. It's actually very low in sugar. It's about a fourth of the sugar of a, you know, traditional, you know, soda. And, you know, people used to eat pie in the old days. They used to drink, you know, pop and things like that. But, you know, before the days of corn sweeteners and artificial shortenings, these foods really weren't too bad for people, you know, on an occasional basis.
So how did you start this?
Well, a ginger bug's great. A ginger bug is a lot like sourdough starter.
Oh.
Now, so that's a wild fermentation. And the amazing thing is anybody can make one. What you do is you're capturing the natural wild yeast and bacteria that are in the air. They're in every breath we breathe.
So I'm guessing you take a ginger root.
Well, you take some ginger root. And if you have a microplane or a grater, you grate a little bit up, like, say, a tablespoon. And you put it in a cup. And then you take about a tablespoon of sugar. I use an organic non-processed sugar, and you stir that up with about a half cup of water, and you stir it real well in the air, and you slosh it around, and if you want to, you can, you know, do it several times a day. But anyway, the natural yeast and bacteria will fall into it.
So that's a tablespoon of sugar, a tablespoon of grated ginger, and a half a cup of water.
Yes. And
I'm going to run right home and do
and
this.
And then cover it up. Mm-hmm. With a tightly knit, you know, like a tea towel or something like that, so you don't want a bunch of dust or anything, or, you know, mm-hmm. fruit flies love fermentation, so you don't want to become a fruit fly farmer. Anyway, so you let it sit out, and then the next day, you stir it up again, and then the day after that, if you dump half out, and then add a little bit more sugar back in, and then eventually, usually for me, about after day three, I'll start to see like a little bit of a white film on top, and that's actually like it's starting to bubble just a little bit. And on day three or four, if you pick it up to your ear, you'll actually be able to hear it start to fizz. And so you know the yeasts are active.
It's like snap, crackle, and pop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And so when you start to hear that, you know you're in good shape. Now you're ready to make soda.
So you take the ginger bug. Then what?
Well, so you take your ginger bug and you take a little bit of it, like, you know, say a quarter cup or so of it, and you put it in a vessel, hopefully one that you can close tightly, and you add about a half cup of sugar and about a half gallon total liquid volume.
Okay.
And then if you want to put some fruit in there, feel free to put any kind of fruit, you know, whatever flavor. You can put more ginger in. If you want to do ginger ale, basically it's ginger, a little bit of lemon.
So more ginger then at that point.
Yes. To, uh-huh. You know, and a person has to just learn what their tastes, you know, like. But a few more tablespoons of ginger.
So you would do that microplane shredded ginger again.
Yeah, well, when you break food down like that, you increase the surface area.
Right.
And so the microbes can work on it. And also the oils will, you know, infuse into your liquid a little more quickly.
Okay, like, so did you put raw rhubarb in this?
I put in raw rhubarb.
And you must have cut it into small bits.
I actually ran it in. I have a like a high speed blender, like a professional blender.
So
I pureed it.
Okay, and the same with the strawberries.
Yes,
too.
But
okay.
If you puree your rhubarb, make sure you have a really, really good colander, a sieve, because it just turns into a bunch of
mush.
Yeah, but it also there's so many pectins in rhubarb, it like expands like applesauce. It looks like you have stringy applesauce, so you have to have a good strainer.
Well,
to
you can
sieve
always
it out.
Strain it through like a coffee filter, catches everything.
Yeah, it works if you have a couple of days to wait. I mean, it's so gooey, it just like it'll plug it. I mean, you need like a whole case of filters. I tried that.
Well, sometimes I have that old cone. Mama used to call it a ricer, but put it through that first.
Sure.
And then to get the finer stuff, I'll go with the coffee filter, because you can filter a couple of times that way and get the.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is a really – when you make stuff like this, it's a really good place if you have a mortar and pestle. And that's something else that's gone by the wayside. You know, mortar and pestles were wonderful. I saw a couple of Italian guys that were using a mortar and pestle, and they were taking garlic and basil. They're going to make a pesto. And they were saying how much better that is than using a high-speed blender because not increasing the heat. Because basically you're micro-heating all your stuff in a blender.
Well, pesto originally meant kind of pounded.
Yeah.
So, you know, but we eat – It takes more time than pushing the button on the blender, actually.
Right.
Heaven forbid on time. I'm imagining the air and the surfaces in your kitchen as you make this stuff. It just sounds magic. If you are in a modern kitchen that has never made any fermented product before, and we have wiped down all of our surfaces to get rid of any kind of dirt, and we've bleached things, and we've put Lysol on things. Does it take a while to kind of reintroduce microbes into our lives?
Well, that's a really interesting question. It's funny, they've done some studies and they've recognized with kids that grew up on farms have a lot less asthma than kids that live in the city. And they think that's from that exposure with dirt. A really interesting thing is that most of the microbes that need to be inside our bodies also are the ones that need to be in the soil. And so when we grow foods in the soil and then we eat these foods, we're introducing microbes, you know, and in the old days, you'd pick up some food and eat it. When I was a kid, you know, I grew up, spent a lot of my time on the farm. I know my hands weren't always the cleanest. You know, you're touching animals, you know, you're running around. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of stuff on your hands and you're eating food and you're introducing these microbes and seeding them back into your body, which is a really amazing, wonderful thing. There's some soil scientists actually now and from North Dakota State. One in particular that's particularly notable is Dr. Elaine Ingham, and she's saying that if we just would learn to reharness the microbes in our soil, you don't even need any chemical inputs. You don't need fertilizer. You don't need any of this stuff. She said you return your soil to the right pH balance, and it's actually the microbes in the soil that are liberating the minerals for these plants to absorb. And then when the plants can absorb the minerals, we eat them, then we get the minerals in a form that we can, you know, use. They're bioavailable, which is a really important term. I mean, you know, science knows how to measure the certain constituents of food. They can say, well, there's so much vitamin A, so much vitamin C, so much vitamin E in this particular food, but they can't tell you how much is bioavailable. And that seems to be a huge problem. And one of the wonderful things about fermented foods is that these microbes, when you eat fermented foods like our sauerkraut or pickles, they actually help with your digestion as they combine with the food you're eating. Like Donna said, if it's in a salad or if it's on a sandwich, and they're helping to bring these minerals out of this food and make it available for your body, you know, to be able to eat. So, you know, with that fermentation process, it's really so important that we're, you know, in the dirt and that we're touching these things and that these things are, you know, part of our lives. We can't be afraid of microbes any longer.
Sarah, tell us about what you're doing on Sunday. So this is your opportunity here, all of us in Central Iowa, to come and meet the Underbergs on Sunday and kind of have your own tasting experience.
Right. So we are hosting what I'm calling a pop-up potluck. And it will be at our building where we make all of our sauerkrauts in Waukee. And you'll also get a chance to talk to Tara Witsit. And she is most famous for converting an old International Harvester bus into a fermentation kitchen, so to speak. And she travels around the country kind of educating people.
Teaching
fermentation. And so this is a great time to, you know, introduce your children and your loved ones and your friends, and even for you to come and learn more about why this is so important and, you know, learn how to do it yourself. And we're encouraging everyone to bring, you know, some sort of dish if they would like to. It does not have to be fermented if you aren't comfortable with that. And another neat thing is she's going to have a culture swap as well. So you can bring one of your own cultures and swap it for another one. If she happens to have one that you don't have and want, I believe it's like a $10 donation for that culture. This is how she raises money to travel across the United States to kind of spread the fermentation love, as it were. And we really just wanted to help her out. And I'm hoping we have a lot of people show up.
Yeah, it's from 2 to 6 p.m.
Yep.
At 445 Maple Street in Waukee.
That's Old Waukee. That's important.
Old Waukee. Okay.
We've got old and new. So Old Waukee, yes.
So this Sunday.
And a website to get information?
Oh, yes. The website.
Is fermentationonwheels.com. You can go there. She also has a Facebook page. It's just facebook.com/fermentationonwheels. And then you can also find information on it at our Facebook page, which is facebook.com, and that's /agriculture.iowa. And we
Agricultured.
With an ED. Iowa. And then we also have facebook.com/pop-up-potluck, and that's us. So you can find more information there. You know, you can RSVP. Let us know what you want to bring. So, and then, I mean, you can, you know, you'll also be able to hear people's stories and why or how, you know, fermented foods have changed their lives. And you can come and hear my story, and which is one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about doing this. I was probably one of the biggest naysayers when we began, so.
But you don't seem to be now.
No, it's really opened up a lot of things for me. It's really opened my eyes to the truth. And it's also kind of showed me how ignorant we all can be and how ignorant I was. And, you know, I really don't want to be that way always. I want to learn. I want to know more. And I'm extremely passionate about it. So
good, good. And it's a wonderful way to empower us through eating.
Through making your own.
Making your own.
Plus, Eric gives away all of his good recipes.
Yes. Well, anybody can make fermented foods, and that's the greatest thing.
True.
If you want to come down on Saturday, she's going to be down at the Forest Avenue Outreach giving a demonstration so you can get a hands-on experience with fermentation.
She has two.
Right. I mean, everybody used to make fermented foods and, you know, in the old days, and so that's what we're trying to do is get people back on those traditional pathways of eating. And fermentation is definitely a huge part of it, along with, you know, natural foods and, you know, other things like that. And plus, it's a wonderful – you know, as families seem to fall apart nowadays, everybody's on their cell phone going different directions. You know, food used to be a gathering thing that really united people and brought them together. And hopefully people can restore that, too.
Mm-hmm. So learn about this process. Come and taste some of this wonderful food. If you've got to do something that's good for you, it should really at least taste good. Thank you for joining us on the Donalana Kitchen today. We've been talking to Eric and Sarah Underberg from Agricultured Fermented Foods. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Good. Oh, I'm hungry right now. Oh, is that good? So, want to mention that Art Walk is coming up Friday. This Friday, come down to the KHOI studio. People have been working on the front of the building. There's been some spring cleaning going on down here. The KHOI Doodle Squad, a live and lively art happening, will be happening. So see a mural as it gets done. It'll be good. So let's play a little music to go out. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen with special guests Eric and Sarah Underberg. We've had music by Susan Sternberg and Sam Bartlett from their CD Belting You with Reels. Visit the KHOIFM.org webpage for more information about this fine community radio station, and visit our webpage, our part of the webpage there, and learn more about us. Support this good radio station. My name is Lana Nachtigal.
And I am Donna Priskintas.
We've had excellent engineering by Rick Morrison, as usual, and we've had good food, too. Eat good food and enjoy life.